Hello everyone, Kelly here with some exciting news. Since recording this podcast, we have now learnt that 4 postponed Premier League fixtures have been confirmed for game week 22, meaning 8 teams will have a double game week. You can find all the details of those over at fantasy.premierleague.com. We'll be looking ahead to those particular fixtures on next week's episode, which will be out, as always, on Thursday ahead of the Friday deadline. But in the meantime, enjoy this week's podcast, which still has plenty to help you prepare your teams. From the Premier League, it's the official Fantasy Premier League podcast. It's the first FPL podcast of the new year, and with no Premier League fixtures this weekend, we do a stock check on our teams as we search for green arrows in 2022. Well, hello, happy new year, a new dawn and plenty of new opportunities, meaning, of course, there are plenty more FPL points available. And with there being a break for FA Cup third round this weekend, there is a chance for us to take stock of where we're at and how we can attack the rest of the season. I'll be doing just that in the company of French football expert Julien Laron. Hello, Jules. Good to have you back on.
Hi, Kelly. Thank you very much. Hi, everyone.
We're also joined by journalist Tom Williams. Tom, good to see you.
Hi, Kelly. Good to see you too.
And finally, FPL Family's Lee Bonfield concludes our panel.
Hey, Kelly. Happy New Year, everyone.
Yes, Happy New Year, everyone. Let's all hope for plenty of green arrows in this new year that is 2022. Now, we are recording this podcast in the very unique position of being midway through a game week with 8 fixtures gone and 3 of the double game week fixtures still ahead of us. Let's see where we are with most of the game week played. FPL managers jumped on West Ham and Everton players in particular, with they and Brentford having double game weeks confirmed. But it was a lesser selected hammer, Manuel Lanzini and Mads Ruslev, who have stolen the show so far. Elsewhere, Brighton's Alexis McAllister and Spurs' Davinson Sanchez also bagged 15 points. Sanchez in particular, interesting as he scored the winner at Watford, assisted by Son Heung-min, and Spurs recorded their 4th clean sheet in 6 matches. Dominic Calvert-Lewin returned, but he missed a penalty and got 0 points as a result, as Everton lost to Brighton. And we had one of the games of the season so far, as a 2-2 thriller saw Mo Salah sign off with a goal versus Chelsea before he departed for AFCON. Okay then, let's dive into it. Let's start with you, Jules. Your team, you're the only one who didn't take a points hit, but how has the game week gone for you?
No, great, Kelly. I was really unfortunate because I've had four players who didn't play: Gallagher, Matip, Foden, and Watkins. And I put Gabriel on the bench because I knew that he could have had a torrid time against City, and that's exactly what happened. And now he's going to come back into my team and give me a -3, which I think is a bit unfortunate, really.
As for you, Tom, it'll be 35 points with your points hit, and once Emmanuel Dennis comes off the bench for you. You did what 1.2 million managers did and brought in Jared Bowen. He did return, as did Bernardo, Son and Trent. So not too bad.
Yeah, not too bad. And I mean, I've taken a points hit this week, but like a lot of FPL managers, the second I commit to the points hit, I just forget about it. So for me,
it never happened.
For me, I'm actually doing slightly better than the points suggest. But yeah, it hasn't been too bad so far. I looked at the teams that had double fixtures and thought I'd be on much firmer ground backing West Ham players over Everton players, for example. And so far, that's been borne out halfway through those double fixtures. Not an absolutely stellar week. I was hoping that Ronaldo might pull something out of the bag for me against Wolves, which obviously wasn't the case. Mm. Somehow, Ivan Toney is still in my team. Every time I look at my team, I kind of forget that he's there and wonder why I haven't yet got rid of him. So he's firmly in the last chance saloon ahead of Brentford's trip to Southampton in midweek. So yeah, could have been worse, but could also have been quite a lot better.
That's often the way we feel about a lot of weeks, isn't it? Could have done worse, could have done better. Now, someone who might hope that their points hit gets forgotten this week, considering you took an 8-point hit, Lee Bonfield.
Mm.
You. How are you feeling about your team? Because when I look at your team, it's paid off, hasn't it?
Yeah, it did. And I don't like playing it. And as soon as I played the 8-point hit, it didn't feel right. I was like, oh, -8 points. But it's kind of symptomatic of where we are with the game right now. I totally feel what the guys are saying. And Jules was absolutely right. You know, to have 3 or 4 players missing through injuries or COVID or whatever, it's just is symptomatic of the game right now. It's so difficult to predict what's going to happen. And Tom's right as well. You know, we're taking hits every week at the minute. I don't remember a week where I rolled a transfer. I'm taking hits every week. So 8 points was unusual for me, but it paid off. So Foden, Watkins and James out. I mean, James had to go, right? Because he's unlucky with his injury. And I really, really wanted Antonio. Really needed to get Antonio in for this week. So Watkins was the kind of scapegoat for that. And then Foden for Son as well, because I really wanted Son. So an 8 point hit with Son 6, Antonio 7 and Reguilón 6 for Foden, Watkins and James, who all didn't play. Yeah, so far so good.
Yes, 42 points after an 8 point hit isn't bad at all. Now, an update for you on our FPL mini league now. And Claxon, please, because we have a new leader. Thierry Henry has gone joint top with our long standing number one Desert Gooners. Sounds like a bit of an Arsenal 1-2, if you ask me. Don't forget, it's not too late to join. The league code is 1KIKS7. Okay, so that's where we're at so far. Game week 21 resumes next Tuesday with Southampton against Brentford and Everton welcoming Leicester for West Ham takeoff on Norwich on Wednesday. It's time now, though, for us to look beyond then, as a new year also means back to school. We thought it would be a good time to try and get ahead of the class as we grade FPL options. So which players have been teacher's or manager's pet and which have spent most of the season in detention? Now we're going to go through positions and work out which players are the best, not only to have at the moment, but also going forwards as well, because it does feel like there's a bit of a change in the FPL landscape. Let's start in goal then. Aaron Ramsdale is the most owned goalkeeper in the game with 6 clean sheets from his last 10. But the postponed game week 20 plus Manchester City and Spurs and the cancelled game week 25 and 27 fixtures has put many people off. Is he still the best option for you, Jules? I know you're the chairperson of his fan club.
It's a bit more difficult now, of course, as you said, the fixture list, the game, the blank weeks for him, the fact that they play Spurs in the next league game, which is not going to be easy. So if you have another option on of your bench, for example, if you were clever enough to do that, for example, I think it's good. Otherwise, you can change him. I think it's a shame that Mendy is away as well at the AFCON, because he could have been another good option. But then there's plenty of good goalkeepers. Robert Sanchez, for example, who's got good fixtures coming up, that could be interesting. But it feels like maybe for now you can put Ramsdale either on your bench or just sell him for a few weeks and then maybe bring him back later.
Yeah, good idea. I think that's what a lot of managers are thinking at the moment. Lee, would you echo those thoughts?
Yeah, I would. I think Ramsdale was the go-to for a number of weeks, wasn't he? But I think if you don't have him right now, I don't think it's the right time to bring him in, as Jules was saying. I think I would be looking further afield. And yeah, I mean, David De Gea, certainly one to look at. But Man United aren't keeping clean sheets and not looking that great in terms of their performances either. But a team that are looking particularly good at the moment are Wolves. And Jose Sarr has been excellent. 6 clean sheets from their last 8 Wolves, including a clean sheet last time out. And they look really good defensively. The thing that gets me, though, with Jose Sarr is that you can get their defenders. The Wolves defenders are a little bit cheaper. Sarr is an expensive goalkeeper. He's up there with Ramsdale. He's 5.1 in the game right now. So for 4.8, I think you could have Nelson Semedo. For 4.5, you could have Max Kilman. And we'll talk about defenders a bit later on. So do you want to pay that little bit extra to get into that Wolves defense, knowing that you're also not necessarily going to get the upside that you might get from an attacking perspective with Semedo, for example? So I will be looking at the Wolves defence going forward, and Jose Sarr is on my radar, but I think I'll probably go a bit cheaper with someone like Robert Sanchez and then invest in the Wolves defence instead.
Well, you mentioned Robert Sanchez there. Tom, you don't own Aaron Ramsdale, and Sanchez is one of your two goalkeepers. Given everything that Lee and Jules have just said, you must be pretty happy at the moment not having the Arsenal goalkeeper and having the men that you have instead.
Well, I had been feeling a bit of Ramsdale remorse because I missed the very obvious opportunity to bring him in when I was reshuffling my goalkeeper department a few weeks back. And, you know, apart from the fact he's a great FPL asset, he's a great goalkeeper and he's a great guy. So I was sad not to be able to find room for him in my team. But yeah, I've gone for a dual goalkeeper strategy in the sense that I've got two goalkeepers who I theoretically can bank on to bring in points, reflecting the uncertainty that there's been around the fixtures of late. So yeah, I've got Robert Sanchez and Emiliano Martinez, neither of whom have produced a clean sheet between them over the last 2 game weeks.
So that's been
going remarkably well. But looking more long term, they've both got a decent run of fixtures coming up. And their fixtures dovetail relatively well. We know that Brighton have been very solid defensively pretty much all season. Villa have really tightened up at the back since Steven Gerrard came in. So although ideally I would prefer not to have quite so much FPL money tied up in my goalkeeping department, I think with the uncertainty there is around at the moment, I'm quite happy having both of those in my squad for the time being. And I think particularly when you look at their fixtures in the weeks ahead, I'm hoping that the mini ruts they've both fallen into will soon come to an end.
Yeah, how important is it to have two playing goalkeepers in the current climate as well, do you think, Jules?
I think it's ideal. We've mentioned before the strategy in goalkeeper. Either you go for one very expensive and one really cheap who you're never going to play, or like Tom did or does, you have two that you can rotate, you know, when depending on the fixtures and you hoping that both can when they play in your team bring points. I think it's better if you can afford two really good ones like Tom does. I chose one rubbish and one really good, but you know, again, it depends. I think of your budget and you know what you, where you need to get some money off. For example, if you want to get someone and you need 0.5 or 0.6, something like that. And then that also, I think, has an influence on who you go for in goal.
I would love to be part of a Julien Laurent managed team. The team talks he would give, you're really good, you're my rubbish goalkeeper. No holding back. What a team talk that would be.
It's the way it works. You know, it's a tough world out there.
You know. Okay, it's a tough world out there. I'm going to be tough on you now and ask you all to pick a first and second choice goalkeeper. So if you were wild carding right now, or if you were able to change your goalkeepers, which two would you go for? Starting with you, Lee.
Oh, it's a really difficult question, isn't it? I think I'd have to leave Ramsdale out. You know, I'd probably have Saar and Sanchez. Those would be the two that I'd pick.
Yeah, Saar priced at 5.1, Sanchez at 4.6. You've got one slightly more expensive, one slightly cheaper. What about you, Tom?
I'm tempted to just copy Lee and say Saar and Sanchez, but knowing that Wolves' fixtures take a bit of a dive from game week 24 onwards, I'm going to back myself and I'm going to go Sanchez-Martinez.
He's already got the main two. Look at that.
Wow.
The polar opposite to Jules. He's saying, I've got confidence in both of my goalkeepers. Jules,
that's how you keep a happy camp. You've got to keep morale up.
Jules, which goalkeepers would you go for? Clearly not one of your rubbish ones.
No, I mean, I've had a bit of an incident recently where I was with Hugo Lloris, who was very unhappy that he was not in my team. We've been friends for a long time, so I feel like I have to bring him in now. And especially it was also, as we've been saying, Lee said, on the back of the good form defensively that Spurs have had in the last few weeks. So Lloris would be one of them. And then I'll go for Sanchez, my second one.
Yeah, 5.4 for Hugo Lloris. And Spurs do have a very good defensive record at the moment, which leads us on nicely to their back line. Spurs do have 5 clean sheets from 8 under Antonio Conte. Are they the main team to be targeting in defence as well, do you think, Tom?
Yeah, I think with the caveat that their fixtures aren't fantastic the next few weeks. So home to Arsenal in the derby, then away at Chelsea, home to Southampton Wolves, away at Man City, away at Leeds. So there are games there where you can see them returning defensive points, but then there are games where they're obviously going to be under the cosh as well. And as we saw in the League Cup semi-final first leg against Chelsea in midweek, despite that defensive improvement, Spurs remain fundamentally Spurs and are not yet safe from the kind of defensive calamities that we saw at Stamford Bridge. But yeah, I mean, there's been a clear improvement defensively since Antonio Conte came in, which is exactly what we thought would happen. I've got Sergio Reguilón, who returns at both ends of the pitch, or at least he does when he's playing, when he's in form. But I think the fact that they do have those sticky fixtures to come means that I'd be wary about going all in on Spurs from a defensive point of view. But I think having maybe one defender or maybe, as Jules says, Hugo Lloris isn't a bad approach.
Yeah, they do have those rearranged fixtures to come as well. So the potential of double game weeks. Who's the best option there in that Spurs defence, do you think, Lee? Tom mentioned Sergio Reguilón. He's the most popular of their defenders, but he's 5.4. Emerson Royale and Ben Davies are that little bit cheaper. Who would you go for?
tough call, isn't it? But certainly over the last six, they've shown they can be so defensively astute under Antonio Conte, best for XGC, and conceded the fewest shots as well. So they are looking good, as both of you guys have suggested. I know, Tom, they had a bit of a... It wasn't a great performance in the Carabao Cup against Chelsea, but they were missing a couple of key personnel there. I think Eric Dier makes such a difference from a leadership perspective at the back. So I think with him coming back in, I'm happy to invest in the Spurs defence going forward. And I have done. I bought Reguilón in this week. And I think it's a straight shootout between him and Emerson Royale on the other side. I noticed actually every time they got the ball, Spurs, they were looking to get it wide to Emerson Royale. And he was top for crosses in that game. In fact, he was top for crosses throughout the whole of the fantasy game in this game week so far with 14. To put that into context, the next best... which was Ben Johnson at West Ham, was 5. So Emerson Royale, every opportunity getting the ball into the box. And he was also top across the whole game week for touches in the opponent's half as well, Royale. So of the two, I've got Reguilón because I think he's historically the one that looks to pass the eye test best for me. I think he's the one that will not only get you the clean sheets, but get you the attacking points as well. But just a shout out to Emerson Royale. Certainly statistically, if not from an FPL points perspective yet, he seems to be posting the underlying stats that suggest that the points are coming. But both are good options, Kelly.
Yeah, Sergio Reguilón priced at 5.4 million, Emerson Royale at 4.9, and Ben Davies is a little bit cheaper at 4.5. Now, whilst Spurs may be statistically impressive, Manchester City are still, as the Premier League table suggests, the best defensively. 4 clean sheets from 6. Joao Cancelo is their most owned player. Is it worth the double up on Manchester City, do you think, Jules?
I think Cancelo is a must-have. And then I think Emerick Laporte has gone really under the radar because, one, he's clearly a starter now with Ruben Dias. There's no John Stones anymore, certainly not regularly. And he's also been scoring recently and during this festive period. And I think he's much better on set pieces than Ruben Dias is, for example. And I think a lot of the set piece they work on is for Emerick Laporte. So I think it's... Again, if you fancy having two City defenders in your team, which could be a very good idea, seeing how strong they are defensively, I think Laporte could be the one with Cancelo to come. You can, of course, go for another fullback or for Ruben Dias too, who's very solid. But I think Laporte is cheaper and very interesting, especially on set pieces.
Yeah, 4 clean sheets from 6 for Manchester City. Tom, any other teams or players getting your attention that we should consider?
I mean, from a defensive point of view, I kind of feel like I have got various cheap options who I would probably upgrade if I wasn't frantically trying to put fires out in every other area of my team. So, for example, Kieran Tierney, who is the most informed defender in the game at the moment, albeit Arsenal's fixtures aren't great and they've got those two blank game weeks coming up between now and game week 27. But I think, if I'd had him in rather than Ben White, who's been my Arsenal defender since the beginning of the season, I'd be doing slightly better than I currently am. And another one in that sort of price bracket is Tariq Lamptey. I've got Brighton goalkeeper in Robert Sanchez, as previously discussed, and I'm generally wary about doubling up on defensive players from the same team, particularly when it's not one of the big clubs who are likely to rack up clean sheet after clean sheet after clean sheet. But as I've said previously on this pod, Lamptey is such a threat in an attacking sense as well. And at that price, I think if you are looking to move funds around and free up funds for moves elsewhere, he's a great one to get in.
Yeah, I agree with you, Tommy. He's such a fun pick, isn't he, Tariq Lamptey? But I also agree with your other comment. I don't think that I would double up defensively, not just because of the uncertainty that we've got around fixture scheduling and everything else, but that double up in defence right now, Brighton have been pretty good so far this season, but only pretty good. I would suggest that actually that clean sheet could go at the drop of a hat. So I think Lamptey is the one to have because you've got that upside that comes with him. I like Sanchez because of his price point. So you could go in on both, but I would choose one. And I think I would maybe just lean towards the goalkeeper, given that that is a problem for us Ramsdale owners.
Yeah, and speaking of attacking fullbacks, two who we haven't mentioned so far are Matty Cash and Matt Target at Villa. Yeah. Fullbacks were a really important piece of the jigsaw under Steven Gerrard at Rangers, and we've seen that already in his early weeks at Villa. I mean, every time I watch Villa, I just seem to see Matty Cash constantly charging forward into space on the right-hand side. And as discussed previously, Villa's fixtures do take a bit of an upturn in the weeks ahead. So those two, and particularly Cash, are two I'm going to be keeping my eye on for sure.
So Manchester City, Spurs, and Aston Villa, with potentially a sprinkling of Brighton in there, but maybe not the double up. Is that the consensus we're going for from this chat, Lee?
Yeah, I think that's a general consensus, Kelly. And Tom's right again. Yeah, those Villa fixtures from game week 24 are unreal for maybe like 5 or 6 weeks. So they've got Manchester United and Everton coming up, which, by the way, on the fixture difficulty ticker, look bad. They sort of look bad on paper, but actually don't. You know, maybe you think about those out loud. Man United and Everton might be pretty good fixtures for them. So maybe it's time to invest right now, knowing that from game week 24 onwards, the fixtures get sensational. So of the two, I think I would probably plump for Matty Cash. I think certainly he's the one that's getting the touches in the box. He's the one that's getting the shots away. But either he or Target look pretty good in that new Gerrard system. I think you're right, Tom.
Moving up the pitch now and into midfield, because for so long, Mo Salah has been our head boy, hasn't he? But now he's gone to AFCON, meaning he will miss the next two games against Brentford and Crystal Palace. So before we discuss replacements, there is only one man on this panel that still has him. It won't come as a surprise to regular listeners that Lee Bonfield was determined to get as many points out of him while he still could. And it paid off, of course, against Chelsea. But what are you going to do with him now, Lee?
Yeah, he's the sort of asset that if he's available, he's in my team. Forget about who he's playing and everything else. And yes, he returned against Chelsea and very unlucky against Leicester. I'm not going to go there because I'm still scarred by the penalty miss in that game. But if he's available and he can play, he's in my team. So given that he's not playing for the next two, I must admit I came into this podcast thinking, yeah, he's absolutely a sell for me. For the next 2 weeks, I'll bring in some differentials and then I'll bring him back for game week 24, which is when we expect him to come back. I mean, wait to see how Egypt get on at the African Cup of Nations. But assuming they get all the way to the final, then game week 24 is a couple of days after that. With travel, etc., could he be back for... I guess he could. We don't know, right? I'm speculating a little bit. But that's when I'm hoping Mo Salah comes back into FPL. And if that's the case, then maybe I just bench him for a couple of weeks. And the reason I'm thinking that way is because I don't see any other really good alternatives in that price bracket. I mean, we'll talk about Kevin De Bruyne in a little while. I did think about selling him and bringing Ronaldo or Kane or Lukaku up front. We'll talk about forwards in a second as well. But I wonder whether I might just bench him for a couple of weeks. However, it does give me the opportunity, Kelly, I think you're right, to bring in somebody for a couple of weeks as a differential, maybe leave the money in the bank if I don't want to go for another premium, and then bring him back immediately in game week 24. So I'll be interested to hear what the other guys are going to say about who I should bring in for Salah for this couple of weeks. Son looks like the most natural one. I think you said that before, Kelly. 6 matches in a row, I think he's returned now. And if you've got Jota and Bowen, I think they're good picks as well. But outside of those three, it's kind of difficult to know where to go with your Salah money.
Well, Tom and Jules have both sold Mo Salah. Jules, you bought in Son. That was the most common replacement initially for the Egyptian. As Lee said, all of the stats suggest that's a brilliant move and one you must be pretty happy with.
Yeah, that worked really well. And I've kept the money in the bank for when Salah comes back. Because I think if you can just bench Salah and keep him in your team, like Lee maybe will do, I think that's great. You need a very strong bench though and replacement to do that. The only issue I have is that he might come back for game week 24, maybe 25th or whatever. But we don't know. He could get injured during the tournament, which obviously we don't hope, but then there could be obviously COVID. You don't know what kind of fitness level he will come back, especially if Egypt go really far and maybe all the way or something like that. So there's too many uncertainties that I want to see and wait and see how he is when he's out of the African Cup Nation. And then because I still have the money in the bank, I can easily bring him back with a free transfer. So I wait and see, but I think if you, like Lee, have a bench strong enough to be able to just put Salah there and keeping in your team, you know, why not? It's probably a better choice than selling and buying again.
People may look for cover at Liverpool, Tom. Diogo Jota, Lee's already mentioned him. He's going to be playing up front. How does Salah's absence affect him? Does it enhance it and make him almost must-have?
I suppose it could work in one or two ways. I mean, the absence of Salah and Mane means that Jota becomes almost by default Liverpool's main man. So does that mean that everything is now going to go through him and he's going to get in even more goal-scoring positions and rack up even more points? Or will Liverpool be so diminished as an attacking force by the departure of Salah and Mane that Jota will be left feeding on crumbs. I guess we'll have to wait and see. I think the sort of most interesting thing from a Liverpool perspective is trying to pinpoint which players might come into the team to replace Salah and Mane. So is that Minamino? Is that Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain playing further up? It'll be interesting to see what they do. I've somehow managed to get to this point of the season without Diogo Jota in my team. So depending on what I decide to do in game week 22, he'll be coming in pretty sharpish. But just sort of generally speaking, I think one of the striking things for me about FPL at the moment is that when I look at potential transfers, there aren't loads and loads of players who I'm desperate to get into my team. What Lee was saying, there's maybe sort of two or three in each area of the pitch who you might want to bring in if possible. But there's so much uncertainty. There are so many players who, are out of form or whose positions aren't guaranteed that, you know, given the fact that those of us who've already taken Salah out will almost certainly be looking to bring him back in, if you can roll over transfers in this period, it's probably quite a useful thing to do because, whenever Salah is back and playing again for Liverpool, you'll want to be able to bring him in without creating too much disruption in your squad.
Just quickly on Jota, for the listeners, let's not forget that he will have to play wide now, that Firmino, you would think, will come in and start every game, which is very different to him playing centrally with Mane and Salah on each side of him, although Salah and Mane get a lot of the ball. But it's a very different role for him now that Firmino is going to come in to have to play wide. And certainly, I don't think we'll touch the ball in the box in as many central areas that he would usually do when Salah and Mane are with him in that front three, if you want.
Okay, so that's the Liverpool and Mo Salah conundrum covered off. Well done, by the way, to Tom Williams, who, after getting a lot of abuse from Lee Bonfield the last time you two were both on this podcast for selling Mo Salah, he, of course, then blanked the following week. Tom then sent us in that lovely voice note last week. So well done for keeping your cool and not continuing that little debate, shall we call it, Tom?
I mean, I will absolutely accept your praise, but let's not forget that after that, he went and scored a worldie at Chelsea. So I was right back behind,
exactly.
I was right back behind my sofa again.
Well, credit where it's due for that game against Leicester. I know you foresaw that missed penalty and that blank coming. That's exactly why you sold him. Moving on now, anyway, to other options outside of Liverpool and Son Heung-min. You all bought in Jarrod Bowen. Manuel Lanzini, as I said earlier, actually outscored him. But are you happy with that decision beyond this game week, Jules?
Yeah, I think it was really good. If you were wondering at the time who you would go for captain as well because of the double game week for West Ham, I mean, Bowen was so easy and made that decision for us, really. I think even if Lanzini was great and Antonio was back on the score sheet, plus Benrahma, who delivered that amazing ball on the Antonio goal, a lot of the good things that West Ham do go through Bowen anyway. So he's such a fantastic impact player, isn't he, on the ball? So intelligent. So yeah, I think that worked out well. And he's someone that you keep now. It took me a long time to bring him in. And I was, as I said many times on the pod, I was never really too sure about West Ham going forward, as in the sense that they've got lovely, lovely players, great technical ability and all of that. But I don't know. I was never too sure what David Moyes would do with all of them. It looks like after a big dip in form, I think now they're getting better for the second half of the season. So I think Bowen made a lot of sense for this week.
Yeah, he got that assist, didn't he? And still has that game against Norwich on Wednesday to come. What about Manchester City then? This feels like the constant debate. We thought for so long, didn't we, that Bernardo Silva was going to be the man. Then he avoided involvement in 18 consecutive Manchester City goals. Then some people, me, sold him. And of course, he got an assist against Arsenal. Who's the best option there then, Lee? Don't tell me Bernardo Silva, please.
This is the perennial question, isn't it? It's so difficult. I still stick with Phil Foden. I mean, I sold him last week, but I'm kind of desperate to get him back in. Depending on how the double game weeks fit and how they fall, maybe I'll bring him back in for game week 22. But I still think he's the one to have. Whenever he plays in that team, he's the one that looks most dangerous. He's the one getting in all of the dangerous positions. And Pep often plays him in that false nine position as well. So with all that creativity around him, he's the one that's going to get the goals and get the assists. Yeah, Bernardo Silva's a bit of a funny one, isn't he? Because he kind of avoided getting involved with 18 consecutive Man City goals before that assist versus Arsenal. So a bit unlucky to do so. I remember watching a few of those Man City games and actually he was unlucky to not be involved in any of those 18. He's still passing the eye test for me. So if you've got him, I don't think he's a sell, Bernardo Silva. And he won the penalty. He's very wily, wasn't he, to win that penalty against Arsenal. And then elsewhere, if you want to go a little bit more expensive, if you do want to sell Mo Salah over the next couple of weeks and you have got that money in the bank, then maybe Kevin De Bruyne's the one to look at. He's created the most chances and had the third most shots amongst midfielders over the last six matches. So he's the form player in that Manchester City side. So I don't know how good a job I'm doing of answering your question, Kelly, because you've got so many options there. But for me, Phil Foden is still the one to have because he's the one that looks most dangerous when he plays.
A word on Arsenal midfielders as well, Jules. As Mr. Arsenal, they've got two blanks in their next six. We've already discussed Aaron Ramsdale and their difficult fixtures and why maybe managers would part company with him. Now, the Arsenal trio of Emile Smith-Rowe, Bukayo Saka and Gabriel Martinelli have all been popular, but is now the time to part ways with those? Because they're a good price point. That's the problem, isn't it?
Yeah. No, I think they're tempting, of course. Maybe, again, if you can keep, depending on how many you have, but I think Saka is still the best of the three. We were big fans of Smith Rowe on the show before, but now he's clearly a super sub again. And even if he will come off the bench and potentially score like he did in those four games in a row, I think Saka is a safer option just in terms of starting point of view. But you could bench him, especially on those blank game weeks or even the game away at Spurs. But keep him in your squad. I think that's probably the best option if you can afford to do that. Otherwise, it's true that at the moment, I don't think Arsenal players should be too popular.
Yeah, I agree with you, Jules. I think Saka looks so good, doesn't he? What do you think about Smith Rowe? Is Smith Rowe lost his place now? Because he seems to be starting on the bench more often than not. And although in recent weeks he's come off the bench to score goals, so good for his owners. But a word for Martin Odegaard as well, because he's the one that, for me, that's the creative fulcrum in that Arsenal side. And he's the reason I think Smith Rowe can't get in the team at the minute. What do you think of Odegaard?
Yeah, you're right. Odegaard is really interesting. The thing is, he's one of those almost old school number 10s that would be amazing on the second assist. So the pass before the assist, if you want, which sometimes quite unfairly doesn't give you any points in FPL. So you can bring him in and he's on a lot of set pieces too. Saka is as well, but so is Odegaard. And I think it could bring you some points. With Smith Rowe, I think Arteta likes the pace from Martinelli and the movement that Martinelli brings into this team, especially when, like I said, drops a bit deeper. So I could see Smith Rowe not really being back as a regular starter in that team and keeping the Martinelli, Saka, Odegaard midfield three behind, like I said, if you want. So I would be a bit wary about Smith Rowe, regardless of how good he is and how big impact he can have from the bench. And I think, again, Saka and Odegaard are certainly your safest option. And I think Saka, in terms of points return, could be the one that I think brings more than the other three.
Okay, well, midfield really does feel like a minefield, but it does seem like either benching if you can or selling Salah is the answer. Son seems to be the most popular replacement. Diogo Jota will probably cover you Liverpool-wise, but approach with caution. Jared Bowen looks like a good option at the moment. Manchester City, again, approach with caution. Bernardo, hold if you've got. Maybe if not, look at Phil Foden. And Arsenal, the best option is Bukayo Saka, I think. That's the conclusion we can take from
that summary,
Kelly, section.
Great summary.
Yeah, it took me a while, that one. finally, then, the final position to discuss are forwards. They're often the teacher's pets, aren't they? The ones that get all of the praise. But that doesn't feel like it's quite been the case this season. Let's start with the premiums. When I say premiums, I'm meaning Cristiano Ronaldo, Harry Kane and Romelu Lukaku. Do any of those make the grade for us as FPL managers at the moment, Lee?
Well, here's the conundrum I've got, right? If I want to sell Salah, or if I'm going to sell Salah, I'm going to have all this money burning a hole in my pocket. And if I was going to do it, it would be to switch some funds around and bring in one of the premium forwards. But who to bring in at the moment? I mean, we've had this kind of fairly public fallout with Romelu Lukaku and Thomas Tuchel, which I think they've kissed and made up now. It sounds as if, you know, Rom's come out and apologised and played in the Carabao Cup last night and looked pretty good. So, you know, maybe you could go to him, but at the moment, I don't think Chelsea as a team are playing great. I mean, they certainly played better a bit earlier on in the season. Of course, they're off to the Club World Cup at some stage over the next few weeks. So they've got some blank FPL game weeks coming up. So if anything, I'd be looking to move away from my Chelsea assets and did this week with Reece James and May again next week with Marcus Alonso. So I don't think I'm going to be bringing him in. Cristiano Ronaldo, great fixtures on paper. And I think looked good from game week 15, didn't they, the fixtures? And I think a lot of FPL managers bought him in. But since then, only a couple of goals. He's had two postponed games, three blanks. United looking a bit hit and miss. Wolves played very, very well at Old Trafford. And Ronaldo didn't really get much of a sniff, did he? So not really feeling him either. So then I go to Harry Kane and I think, well, OK, so he's the one that's looking as if he's got a bit of form back. Three goals in three before that blank against Watford. But if I've got Son in the midfield, which I'm pretty sure most of the people listening to this podcast will have, he's a very popular transfer in this game week, then do I want to double up in that Spurs attack? And although I like what Antonio Conte is doing there, I'm not confident enough to go for the double up. So to be honest with you, Kelly, I'm kind of looking elsewhere outside of those three premiums because none of them really turn me on enough to want to re-spend that Salah money up front.
Jules, what about you then? Because Harry Kane, your son, you had a big falling out, the infamous one earlier this season. Have you gone back to him yet? Will you be going back to him yet or any of those? Or are you like Liam looking elsewhere?
No, I'm not so sure yet about Kane. You know, every time I think, okay, the form is going to come. He scored before the Watford game. He scored two and two, didn't he? 2 6 6. I mean, you say, okay, this is it now. This is the turning point. We're going to see the Kane, the old Kane again. And then Watford, he was not very good. Chelsea in the League Cup, he was terrible, I thought, for most of the game, just not looking like Harry Kane. And I'm like, okay, maybe now is not the moment. So it's a tricky one. I agree with Lee. Maybe you have to look outside of that. And I was at Stamford Bridge for the Chelsea-Brighton game. And again, I watched the Everton-Brighton game. And I thought Neil Maupay was fantastic in both games. And I think he's a really underrated striker in the league. And I think he's a great differential to have. 6.1% ownership. He only costs you 6.5 million. And Brighton plays so good. They create so much. They've got, he's such a key part in everything they do, whether it's an assist, and we saw the two assists against Everton, whether that's a goal. And he's, I think he's worked a lot on his finishing and he's more clinical than maybe he's been before in previous seasons. So I'm very tempted to bring Neil for, and also, you know, it's, he's French, so he can only be handsome.
Of course.
Quelle surprise.
Quelle surprise.
I wasn't going to point out that once again, the French football expert has recommended a French footballer.
What do you mean, once again? And he's not even from Paris, so it'd be worse if he was a Paris-born and bred kid. You know?
Looking elsewhere then, Tom, Lee mentioned that he was looking outside that premium price bracket. Where would you look if you weren't going for the big guns?
I think one player I'll be keeping an eye on over the next few weeks is Dominic Calvert-Lewin. Obviously made a less than spectacular return to action at the weekend with that pretty hopeless penalty against Brighton. But we know what an effective goal scorer he can be. And now that he's fit, you'd expect him to start every game. Everton's fixtures are fantastic. You look at the next five game weeks, starting with game week 22, away at Norwich, home to Villa, away at Newcastle, home to Leeds, away at Southampton. You would have thought that if Everton are ever going to drag themselves out of the rut they're currently in, that that's going to be the time it's going to happen. And if that's the case, then you would expect Dominic Calvert-Lewin to be among the goals. And at a time when there aren't too many dependable forward options in FPL, I think he's someone worth looking at. I've currently got Ronaldo almost sort of by default, in the sense that, as Lee says, Chelsea have got those blanks coming up, which makes Lukaku less attractive. And as a Son owner, I'm not too keen to double up with him and Kane. But beyond that, yeah, there aren't all that many great options around. Another one who I've been looking at a little bit has been Odson Edouard, who's finally started starting games and scoring goals for Palace. Their fixtures aren't too bad. They've got a couple of tricky home games coming up against Liverpool and Chelsea, but he looks like he's finding his feet. So I think I might look to bring him in for Ivan Toney. But yeah, apart from that, we're really not spoilt for choice in the attacking department at the moment.
We're not, but it could prove to be a timely return for Dominic Calvert-Lewin and also Patrick Bamford potentially when he comes back, Lee.
Possibly. And again, we're kind of clutching at straws a little bit based on what Tom was saying, because we've got not a lot of options elsewhere. But, you know, Leeds with a good performance previous game week, and, you know, the likes of, you know, Robertson, Rafinha and Harrison, they're providing that creativity, as we know they can do when Bamford's in that team. And they have missed him as well. They've missed his threat. They've missed his you know, presence in the box, I think. So it would be a little bit of a punt, I think, getting somebody like Bamford in, and maybe you've got to learn the lessons of those that got Dominic Calvert-Lewin in this week. You know, a guy that's not played for some months, actually, coming back into the team. all right, the penalty miss was very unlucky. But outside of that, the performance was that of a player that hadn't played for some time. And you could see that. It's going to take him time to get back up to speed and back up to match fitness. And I wonder whether, you know, if you were thinking of bringing in Bamford, you might heed that warning. So for me, I think those two could be good options. But I think look no further than Watford. I think Josh King and Emmanuel Dennis, on the fact that Dennis is now not going to the African Cup of Nations, I think they're both really, really good options. I must admit, I got Josh King in myself a few weeks ago on the basis that I thought Dennis was going off to the African Cup of Nations. But straight choice right now, if I was to bring in just one of those, it would be Emmanuel Dennis. I mean, he's set the league on fire, isn't he, this season? So, so good. And the stats are right up there with the likes of Mo Salah in terms of touches in the box and shots on target, etc. So with the fixtures as they are for Watford, looking pretty good, certainly over the next two, Newcastle and Norwich coming up. I think they've got Brighton on the horizon as well. If you've not invested in the Watford attack, have a look at those two.
Dennis is the second highest point earner in strikers, right? Behind Antonio. It's fantastic.
Really
ahead
good.
Of Cristiano and everybody else. Those two have been amazing. And Antonio, we mentioned before when he had that poor form and didn't score, but you knew that at some point that would come back. And now that we saw against Crystal Palace that he's back pretty much like at his best, or certainly in terms of fitness and hunger and determination and all of that, you know that I think Antonio could come back in your team if like me, for example, you sold him a few weeks ago when he was not really firing as much as earlier in the season. So I think Antonio, Dennis, certainly very, very good choices below the sort of super high priced strikers.
Mm. Yeah, nearly 800,000 managers brought him back in the last game week. I wonder how many of those are managers who had sold like Jules after he had that frustrating run of form. Okay then, so it seems the consensus is not to go with premiums, but let's put the panel on the spot and ask for three strikers. If you were able to pick three right now, who would you go for, Tom?
I'm going to stick with Ronaldo just because I've banged the drum about him so long and loud on the podcast this season.
There are still arguments to keep him, definitely.
There are arguments to keep him.
He's a pretty good player, right? Yeah.
And he's not bad.
He's not a bad player on his day. And I'll go for Emmanuel Dennis, who I currently have, and Dominic Calvert-Lewin, who I'm keeping an eye on.
And a striker from each of the price brackets there as well. I like your spreading of funds. What about you, Lee?
I would go also for Emmanuel Dennis. You'll be pleased to hear, Kelly. I would go with Mikel Antonio as well. I think the rest that he had, the enforced kind of rest where West Ham didn't play any games a couple of weeks ago, I think has done him good. And he's coming back and he's hit a bit of form in the last three, two goals and one assist. So Dennis, Antonio. The third one's tough, though. I think I'd go with Tom and maybe back Ronaldo and Ralph Rangnick in Manchester United to get back into form. Yeah, let's go with Ronaldo.
Not trying to say I know what I'm doing, but you're the expert on this podcast and they're the three strikers I've got, Lee. So thank you very much.
What could possibly go wrong, Kelly?
I'm actually thinking of selling Cristiano Ronaldo, though. Anyway, no one cares about that. Jules, what about your strikers? Who would you go for?
Well, I think I keep Cristiano and Dennis, who are already in the squad. And then for the third one, it's a close call
between
Mopé and Antonio. because I'm completely biased, I'll say Neil Mopé, who, like I said before, I think is fantastic.
And he's French, ultimately, not English, like Mikel Antonio. Okay, so hopefully that will help you when planning your transfers in the coming weeks. A reminder, the second wildcard is now available, if, of course, you haven't used it already. Now, we're going to focus on game week 22, because although the deadline may feel like quite a while away, it's time to check in with our panel and see what moves they've already got planned. Now, there is still a lot of football before the Game Week 22 deadline, which is the 14th of January at 6:30 p.m. UK time. But this is the last time we'll hear from our panel this week on the podcast. So let's see what plans are in motion. Jules, have you got any plans in motion at this point?
Only a striker. I think I've got one free transfer, depending, of course, on the latest news with injuries and COVID and all of that. But Ollie Watkins is in my team. I think I was very disappointed I didn't play last weekend, I have to be honest. So I have to get rid. And as I said before, Antonio and Mopé will come in.
Antonio and Mopé, so a change up top. Tom, you said about how you try and keep your transfers at the moment, where if you don't need to make changes, you don't. Are you holding this week or are you going to make one?
I'm holding fire on my transfers for the time being because there is a possibility that game week 22 will be a double game week. And if that's the case, there is a possibility that I will free hit to make the most of those extra fixtures. So I am not making any transfer moves for the time being. That said, at some point I need to bring in Diogo Jota. So I think he'll be featuring in my team in game week 22, whether it's a double game week or not.
And finally, you've got that Mo Salah shaped problem, but you've intimated you could bench him. What are your plans?
Well, Kelly, I'm still, frankly, I'm reeling from Jules's, you know, Ollie Watkins, good fixtures out for Neil Maupai, who's got a blank coming up. That's, I'm still reeling from that. But I wholeheartedly agree with Tom. Lots of uncertainty at the minute, so I'll be waiting till the last minute to make my transfers. If I do move Salah on, then I think it's a good opportunity for me to do, you know, go a bit rogue for a couple of weeks. Just bring in somebody who's a massive differential, somebody who we may not have spoken about on the podcast yet, someone like a James Maddison or maybe just somebody under 5% owned. Just try and make a bit of a step change in my rank with the money in the bank, knowing that Salah's going to come back for game week 24 or 25 whenever he returns from Cameroon. So, I haven't any plans yet, Kelly, because I think there's, like Tom, I'm going to be waiting to the last minute. But if I do something, it will be Salah to a differential.
Interesting, and we do like those differentials. And very quickly, again, I know there's a lot that can happen between them, but if you had to put your armband on one player in your team right now, of course there's no Mo Salah, who would it be, Jules?
I think Emmanuel Dennis away at Newcastle. Ooh. Could be a good shout. Wow. Yeah, could like be a good shout. Like not to go for one of the top players like a Cristiano or
he's a top player, thank you.
No, he's a top player, but not to go for a top player. Or Heung-min Son, who always seemed to score against Arsenal, which will be popular choices. But yeah, maybe Dennis away at Newcastle could be good.
What about you, Tom?
I think as things stand, the best looking fixture is probably Liverpool at home to Brentford. So captain wise, probably looking at Jota if I bring him in, and if not, maybe Trent Alexander-Arnold.
Lee, I'm sure you may be tempted by Trent Alexander-Arnold, given your Liverpool allegiances, no Mo Salah, or are you looking elsewhere?
Well, do you know what? And as soon as Tom said it, I thought he's in my team. So my captain right now is Trent Alexander-Arnold. So we spoke before about Tony not scoring since game week 13. He's on a streak of four blanks. Yeah, listen, going to Anfield's going to be tough for them. And Trent, you know what you can get. You can get attacking returns as well as clean sheets. So he's my bus captain right now. I also think the West Ham fixture against Leeds is nice as well, given Leeds' defensive frailties over the last few weeks. So Antonio and Bowen will come into the conversation. But right now, Trent has the armband in my team.
Well, plenty of time to sort your team. But of course, this weekend, FA Cup third round takes centre stage. Premier League teams enter at this point in the competition. So keep an eye out on how they do and how our FPL assets do as well. Enjoy your weekends off, guys, although I'm sure you'll also be watching the FA Cup very, very closely. We will be back next week with the essential Game Week 22 preview, focusing on fixtures in detail. There's no break, of course, for fantasy.premierleague.com and the Premier League app. Those head over there to keep up to date with everything FPL wise. And in case you want to get your team sorted early, your deadline is 14th of January at 6:30 p.m. UK time. Have a great week, and we'll be back next Thursday.